Chapter 5 Amrila, Nilame, and I went through our usual preparation back at the trailer. Even though we didn't plan on any altercations, it was good to always be prepared in the gloom. The main goal this time was to attend the war council at the encampment. But Ekname mentioned that the Karardu had made a potion to cure the petrified Dolrath in the swamps of the Twilight region, and we would need rations on us for that journey.
Are you going to take Growler and Dread?
Ipsith asked as she cuddled with the two Garms on the old couch in the trailer. I figured Dread could keep you company. I replied while I double-checked my backpack. But I hadn't decided about Growler. They've never been apart, and I'm not sure how they'd take that. I'd kind of like to train them a little more, too, before I take them back down into the gloom.
Then they can stay with me.
The white-haired woman smiled as she ruffled Growler's fur, and he nuzzled against her delicate hand.
Oh, I'll take good care of them.
I smiled as I picked up the Galil and looked it over. And I knew that take care of meant the Garms would be a few pounds heavier the next time I saw them. But I could always take them out for a few runs when I got home. If it made Ipsith happy to spoil them, I wouldn't ruin her fun.
I think we have everything,
Amrila said as she zipped up her pack.
Are we about ready?
I think so,
Nilame replied as she slung her new backpack over her shoulder, and then slipped the strap for her Vector over her head.
I have everything I need.
I'm good too, I nodded. I think we should go through the Great Forest and take the Thieves' Tunnels to Bermshire. Ekname asked that we bring someone from the Yinni Resistance, and I figure that should be Scourge, unless you know anyone better, partner.
Grok could be another option,
the horned woman replied.
But he has the tavern to run and would be missed. Anyone else I could think of would live in the Yinni capital, and going into the Mad Chief city right now would be a huge risk.
Scourge it is, then, I agreed, before I went over to the couch, leaned down and kissed Ipsith. I love you, baby. We'll be back before too long.
I will miss you, my king.
My violet-eyed wife breathed as she cupped my face in her small hands.
I love you, too.
Amrila and Nilame both hugged Ipsith goodbye, and then the four of us walked into the backyard. Ipsith stayed by the back door and silently watched Amrila, Nilame, and I walk into the stand of lilac bushes where the metal door into the surface tunnels was hidden. Then we went down the ladder, and I made sure the door was secured behind us. The journey through the tunnels to the Yinni territory went by quickly, as Nilame enthusiastically told Amrila about her new pistol. We'd left the Bulgarian AK with Ipsith in the new house. The petite woman knew how to use the AK, but I figured I should have her practice more with it when we get back from the council. I had that flyer for the new range that had opened up, so it would be a good way for all the women to get a little more practice with the firearms we owned. So, when was the last time the tribes met like this? I asked Nilame as we stepped through the northern iron door and into the northwestern part of the Yinni lands.
They've never met like this, for as long as I can remember.
The dark-haired woman replied as the large door started to swing shut on its own, and then it blended into the stone wall.
The nomads come to the encampment every few years to meet with Mother, and groups of them pass through to trade all the time. And I've been to the Yinni and Karardu capital several times on official visits.
Is there any reason to think it might not go well?
Amrila asked.
Not that I can think of.
Nilame shook her head.
I can't speak for the rest of the Karardu, but the Dolrath are fairly united in thought and culture. And once the rest of the tribe finds out that Ursinger broke the ancient treaty and made a pact with a demon lord, there will be no question about taking action against him.
That's good, I said as I stopped near the edge of the overlook that stood above the great forest, set my backpack down, and started to look for my binoculars. And since we took care of Igurg, and word has had a chance to spread about that, I think most of the Karardu will be on board. I looked through my binoculars over the top of the twisted trees of the great forest, and searched the air for any movement. The Yinni used the bat-like creatures called Nyctors as scouts, and I wanted to be sure the coast was clear before we started into the forest and had a limited field of vision. The space between the tops of the trees and the high ceiling of the cavern was empty, so I turned my attention to the forest itself to see if I could spot any movement through the thick foliage. It would be impossible to say for sure if there were any of Ursinger's patrols in the forest, but since I was up here, I figured it didn't hurt to look. I didn't see any movement in the tree line either, so I put the binoculars away and slipped my backpack back on. Looks good, I said. There are no Nyctors flying around at least, but we should still be careful in the forest and keep our talk to a minimum until we get to the safety of the thieves' tunnels.
Ready when you are, partner.
Amrila grinned with a hand on the pommel of her favorite sword. The three of us made our way down and into the forest, I could hear the buzz of insects and the chirp of whatever weird birds or small animals inhabited the gnarled woods. As we moved along the familiar paths, I kept an eye out for the brownies and the dense undergrowth, but it wasn't long before the brownies found us. Near the edge of the forest, as we approached the river that cut through the woods, a group of the small, rat-like beings crossed in front of the path and waited for the ladies and I to surround them. I knew the leader right away. The scarred brownie was a little bigger than the others, and he wore a tiny breastplate that was a patchwork of leather scraps. The brownie chief held a needle-like spear in his hand, and when I kneeled down to greet him, he inclined his head. "Hey there." I bowed my head respectfully back at the little warrior. "I'm glad to see you. It's been a while." I still wasn't sure how much the tiny chief understood me, if at all, but it felt more respectful to speak to him, as if he understood every word. The scarred brownie chittered back at me, presumably for the same reason, and then a group of the brownies behind the little chieftain came forward, with a large, sharp tooth on a litter that they held between them. The tooth sat on top of a bed of flower petals and leaves, and something about it felt very ceremonial. The brownies laid the litter down in front of me, bowed and scampered back into the forest. I looked down at the tooth and then at Scarface. "What's this?" I asked as I pointed to the petal-covered litter. Scar gestured upward with his spear, mimicked a high-pitched screech, and then pointed at the tooth near my feet.
"I think they killed Nyctor,"
Amryla said behind me in an impressed tone. "Yeah," I nodded. "I think so too, but why tell me about it?" "Don't get me wrong, I think it's incredible you all did that. Why do you want me to know, though?"
"Maybe,"
Nyleme said in a thoughtful voice as she kneeled down next to me and looked at Scarface.
"He wants you to know that he's fighting against Ursinger too. Was the Nyctor a scout?"
The brownie chief pointed toward the Dolrath woman and nodded in agreement. This also meant they could understand at least some of what we were saying. Scarface looked proud of himself, and I wondered if it was a group of brownies or him personally that killed the bat-like beast. "If that's the case," I said to the scarred chief, "then I hope you can help when the time comes. There's going to be a war, and we could use all the allies we can get." Scarface nodded gravely before he let loose with a string of chitters and squeaks that sounded very grand and serious. When he finished, there was a high-pitched cheer from the brownie warriors behind the little chieftain, and I had to assume that he'd offered his help. "I'm glad to have you on our side." I grinned, then I took off my backpack and rummaged around until I found the pack of dried apricots I'd gotten for the brownies. I set the shrink-wrapped package on the ground, and several of the little warriors came up and took the package away. The rest of the brownies disappeared into the underbrush before Scarface inclined his head to me one last time, and then he too darted under a bush and out of sight.
"I wonder if we should have invited him to the council,"
Nyleme said in her mild voice as she looked over at me. "I don't know if he would have come, honestly." I shrugged. These wild brownies kind of seem to live in a world of their own, but like I said, I'll take all the allies we can get. Amryla, Nyleme, and I continued our journey to the thieves' tunnels, to the small cave where Scourge had a hideout, and as we got close, the red-skinned woman whistled down the tunnel in a very specific rhythm. It sounded like a coded signal to announce our presence, which was good. The last time my wife and I came close to Scourge's hideout unannounced, he had shot at us with a bow. We paused as Amryla whistled again and waited. Then there was a whistle in answer, followed by Scourge's lilting voice.
"Amryla, Eddie, is that you?"
"Yeah, it's us. Nyleme's here too," I said in a voice that carried down the tunnel.
"Well, then come in,"
I heard Scourge chuckle.
"I'll put on some tea."
The ladies and I stepped into Scourge's small cave, which hadn't changed much since the last time I'd seen it. The dark gray-skinned man sat at a small fire as the smoke fed up into a natural chimney in the ceiling, and he set an iron teapot on a hook suspended over the flames.
"To what do I owe the pleasure?"
The slinky man grinned as we all sat around the fire on soft, plush cushions.
"And what adventure do you wish to invite me on today?"
"How about a war council?" I asked as I looked through my backpack for the Zinkari man's gift.
"Ooh."
Scourge breathed with relish and intrigue as he ran a long-fingered hand along one of his sleek black horns.
"Ah, I like the sound of that. Yes, I will come along, but only after tea."
"Mother asked for you by name,"
Nyleme added.
"Really?"
The dark-skinned man smiled.
It seems I'm moving up in the world if one of the elven chiefs has asked me to attend her war council.
The princess is being nice.
Amrila snorted.
Ekname just asked for me to bring a member of the resistance, but your name did come up.
To be thought of at all is an honor.
Scourge shrugged and seemed unfazed. Also, I said as I pulled out the thermos and handed it to the Zinkari man, I brought this for you.
What is it?
Scourge asked, and he gave a perplexed look to the metal cylinder in his hands. It's a thermos, I explained. The top unscrews and you can pour your tea in it. It keeps any liquid hot or cold for hours. I think you can use the top as a cup, too. The man with the black horns turned the top until it came off and looked at the hollow interior and the cup-shaped lid.
How clever,
Scourge replied with a delighted glint in his eyes.
Is there something you have to do to make it keep liquids warm? An incantation, perhaps? I can't imagine who would want cold tea.
I tried to keep a straight face as I explained how the thermos worked to the thief, and he marveled at the ingenuity and seemed genuinely excited to try out his gift. Then, once we'd all drank a cup of tea and Scourge had poured the rest into his new thermos, we started the journey to the Dolrath territory. Thankfully, this leg of the trip was uneventful, and it was only a few hours before we entered into the tent city of the Dolrath capital. But I almost didn't recognize the place, because I'd never seen the city so full before. There were merchants with carts loaded down with wares on every corner, and soldiers milled around the streets. I saw Karardu in their sand-colored robes and loosely fitted clothes, and the encampment was alive with gnomes and orcs, too. I even saw a group of gnomish soldiers from Grimthorn outside of the tavern tent. And the subdued, silent warriors looked around at the boisterous crowd with perplexed scowls on their faces. In Grimthorn, the citizens' strange reverence for the spike growth meant they barely spoke so they didn't disturb the dangerous vines. I kind of felt for them in the noise and bustle of the encampment, because it had to be overwhelming after the quiet they were accustomed to.
I should see if Mother needs any help with the preparations.
Nyla May sighed as we approached the Dolrath meeting house.
It's my duty to help with visiting officials.
I'll come and help too, then, I said, as I moved to follow my dark-haired wife.
You don't have to.
The princess shook her head.
It will probably be dreadfully boring. You three should go around the encampment. I'm sure it will be good for the morale of the soldiers to see the hero of the Dolrath is here with all this talk of war.
Thank the gods!
Amrila replied with an explosive exhale.
I love you, Nyla May, but I do not want to discuss seating arrangements or how best to arrange the tables in the meeting house. Not when there's a tavern and merchants from all over two-thirds of the gloom so close at hand.
That does sound dreadful.
Scourge agreed. No offense, my lady. Are you sure? I said to the Dolrath woman. I don't mind at all.
I'm sure.
Nyla May said as she smiled at me with encouragement.
It's more important for the Dolrath people to see Shield Brother Eddie Hill.
If you say so. I grinned and then kissed Nyla May. But I'll be close by if you or your mother need anything. My third wife nodded in gratitude before she walked to the large wooden meeting house, where a pair of guards bowed and opened the doors for her. She disappeared inside the building a moment later, and then I turned to the other two. What should we do then? I asked Amrila and Scourge. Just wander around? I'm not really sure how to act. I've never been a folk hero before.
Just stand tall and say very little,
Scourge said in a bantering tone as he started to unscrew the cap of his new thermos.
Everyone will be very impressed with your air of mystery.
When the Zinkari man opened the top of the metal cylinder, a curl of steam came out, and Scourge's dark eyes widened with surprise.
By the gods!
The charcoal-skinned man gasped.
It's still as hot as when I poured it.
I told you, I snorted. Come on, you two. Let's be seen, I guess. The three of us waded through the crowded streets of the encampment, and despite the fact that there was an impending war council, the people I saw all seemed to be in good spirits. It felt more like the atmosphere of a festival, really. Merchants called out about their wares, and people greeted old friends they hadn't seen for who knows how long. I did notice a few stares in my direction, but whether that was because I was a head or more taller than everyone else, or because they had recognized me, I couldn't say. It was a strange feeling, though, to be a notable figure in a crowd. I'd always been tall, and people definitely commented about it all the time, but I wasn't so tall for a human that it stood out. Then, somewhere near the center of the city, the three of us came across a crowd of people gathered around a roped-off circle where two men wrestled each other. Bakoth was one of the wrestlers, and he was stripped to the waist and covered with sweat as he grappled with another night elf with short jet-black hair. The crowd cheered and placed bets on who would win, and the air was alive with energy.
Oh!
Scourge perked up as he saw money change hands around the edges of the crowd of spectators.
What fun. I suppose we should support our friend in his blatant display of physical prowess.
That seems like something friends would do.
Emeril agreed with a familiar, greedy look in her dark eyes. Just keep the bets small, you two. I chuckled. Remember, we're here to make friends, and no one likes to lose money to strangers.
Are there people who like to lose money to friends?
The Zinkari man countered with a roguish grin.
We'll be good, father, don't you worry.
I rolled my eyes and stifled a smirk, and because of my size, it was easy to push through the group of people around the makeshift wrestling ring until we had a good view of the fight. The black-haired elf had broken Bakoth's hold, and the two of them circled each other with their hands held out, ready to counter whatever move the other man made. The night elf with the dark hair looked like he was younger than the general, and he had beefy arms and broad shoulders. But Bakoth's arms and chest were covered with ropey, hard muscles that came from a lifetime of exercise and training. And when the younger man darted forward and attempted to tackle the Mohawk general, Bakoth took hold of the other man around the waist and grabbed the top of his trousers. Then the red-haired warrior's whole body tensed, and every muscle suddenly stood out in sharp relief as Bakoth lifted the dark-haired elf with unexpected ease and flipped him head over heels. Then Bakoth bent his back in a strange version of a German suplex as he used the younger man's momentum and slammed him onto the ground. The dark-haired elf sprawled out on the dirt, with his body halfway across the line of the circle, and half the crowd cheered loudly. Then the red-haired general helped his opponent to his feet, and the two shook hands. Both men were drenched with sweat and caked with dirt where they had hit the ground, but they seemed to part amicably. I clapped and cheered with the rest of the throng, but Bakoth turned and smiled when he saw me.
Heady!
The Mohawk general boomed as he crossed the ring and came up to shake my hand.
I knew you wouldn't miss this. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you too. I grinned as I shook my friend's hand. How's the baby?
Every bit as sweet and beautiful as her mother.
Bakoth replied with a proud glow.
Come, try your hand at wrestling. It's a good way to show the younger lads who's in charge.
The last part the general said just loud enough for the dark-haired elf and his friends to overhear, and there was some good-natured banter back and forth.
Oh, I haven't done anything like that since me and my best friend were in school.
I said in a modest tone as I shook my head, and memories of Jay's and my backyard wrestling league flooded my mind. I think I'll pass.
It would not be a fair fight.
Amrila interjected loudly as she came up to Bakoth and I with Scourge close behind her.
My husband is twice the size of any of these men and would have too much of an advantage.
There was a clear challenge in my Zinkari wife's voice, and I knew right away she was up to something. And sure enough, the crowd was parted by a large orc, with only the stubs of a newly grown pair of tusks.
Not against me,
Yaka the orc said with a broad grin. I remembered the big guy from Tok Fett. I don't know what Igurg had done to piss the fierce man off, but I could guess it had something to do with the deep whip scars all over Yaka's body and his sawed-off tusks, because Yaka had been pretty quick to switch to our side.
What are you doing?
I whispered to Amriel as I eyed the big orc. I'd seen Yaka straight up toss other full-grown orcs in the village of Tok Fett. The muscle-bound man was still a few inches shorter than me, but he was twice as wide.
You can bait him.
My mischievous wife shrugged.
And win me a great deal of money. Besides, the challenge has been issued. It would be a bad look to walk away now.
You're a very devious woman. I rumbled in a low tone, but I smiled at her.
And you love that about me.
Emery purred as she looked up at me with her dark, mysterious eyes. It's one of the things I love about you. I snorted, but it's hardly the top of the list. Then I turned toward the ring and started to remove my backpack, the galil, and my cloak.
All right, Yaka,
I said in a tone that I hoped conveyed more confidence than I felt. I accept your challenge. What are the rules?